What sort of a ruler do you think Queen Elizabeth is? So I know she's a queen, all that sort of thing. What sort of a ruler is she? Now, what about this gentleman, Robert Mugabe? I imagine we have perhaps different thoughts on those two rulers. Kevin? Perhaps today I should have asked you what you thought, think of Maurice Yema. If you, yeah, should still be there. If you look up jokes on the internet, you'll find a lot about this man. Not many Americans think much of him, I've got to say, it seems. Or perhaps cast our minds all the way back to someone like King Henry VIII. You know, we've all got different opinions on what sort of rulers these people are. There's a lot more debate about in the world about what sort of a ruler God is. We're going to actually talk today, as we open the book of Esther, about what sort of a ruler God is. And I wanted to start by suggesting that there are perhaps three common myths that people have about God as ruler. Myth number one is that God is a manipulative king. He plays with us like the pieces on a chessboard. That's one opinion, one myth. Second idea is that God is a king who creates the world, sets it spinning, then sits back and doesn't care what happens. Doesn't intervene, doesn't do anything, just watches it happen. It's another view people have of God, if they believe in him. The third myth, that when good things happen, God is in control. When bad things happen, Satan is the king in control. So there's this dual kingship. God is king when good things happen. Satan is king when bad things happen. There are three myths about the way God rules. Now, as we look at Esther today, we could ask the question, what sort of a king is God? The problem is that the book of Esther never actually even mentions the name of God. It's a rare book in the Bible that does that. But these opening two chapters of Esther actually start by telling us about another king, King Xerxes. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at this king, King Xerxes, and compare him to the God of the Bible. Because I think that's why Esther opens these two chapters with this king, so we can actually see the difference in kingship. And so let me give you a bit of background. You've heard a bit of it there already. King Xerxes ruled the Persian Empire, the largest kingdom the world had ever seen, possibly to date still the largest kingdom. It went from India to Kush, which is today's northern Sudan, that whole area in pink, all the way from India to northern Sudan. That's 127 provinces he ruled over. And he lived in the capital, Susa. In the third year of his reign, this is about 480 BC or so, he held a celebration that went for 180 days, 6 months, just displaying the wealth of his kingdom. After 3 years, he sat down and went, well, look at all the wealth I've got. Let's show everyone. So over 180 days, he put it on display. And then at the end of that 6 months, he had a seven-day party like you wouldn't believe. A lavish party. Even the couches were made of silver and gold. Everyone had their own gold chalice. All different. This is everyone in the province of Susa. This was a very wealthy person. I have enough trouble trying to get enough cups when people come over. But gold chalices, all individually made for every person, every bloke in the city. The queen had her own party for the women. And royal wine that never ran out. Do you notice the emphasis on the wine? Give everyone whatever they want. Let them drink however they like to drink. And the royal wine, which is good wine, never ran out. So you can imagine what that place was like while the women were partying with Esther, all the men in Susa partying with King Xerxes with their own golden chalices of raw wine for 7 days and 7 nights of partying and drinking. And so on the last day, King Xerxes makes a strange command. He commands his queen Vashti to be displayed in her royal crown before all the people because she was a very good-looking woman and because Xerxes was very drunk, one would assume. But Queen Vashti refused. Can you believe that? She refused. Ladies, would you refuse an invitation like that from your drunk king to come and appear before all the men at a party after 7 days of drinking? Now, I imagine you would. But especially, as some translations suggest, if she was asked, as it appears, to appear only in her royal crown. Some translations would lend a very strong support to that idea that she was asked to appear naked before these men to show her beauty. Well, either way, Queen Vashti said no to a very powerful, rich, wealthy, and drunk king. And now he's very mad. And so he throws Vashti out. She's never allowed to see him again, because the last thing he wants in his kingdom is all the blokes turning to all the women turning to their guys and saying, "Well, I don't have to listen to you because the queen doesn't listen to the king." Can't have that. So kicks her out. Sends everyone a strong message. So Xerxes needs a new wife. So in this horrible, twisted sort of form of a beauty contest, he has all the good-looking virgin women brought to him over the next 4 years. It's a great story, isn't it? You just don't get this stuff on TV, do you? Has all these beautiful virgin women brought to him over a period of 4 years, and again, some suggest that he slept with a different one each night for the next 4 years, until he chose a new wife to make her queen. And that's where we meet Esther, the winner of the beauty contest. Not much of a prize for a young girl who was possibly around 14 years old. Not a nice prize at all. One of God's people, Esther. Mordecai, her adopted father, third generation from captivity. Xerxes is a king who rules by controlling and manipulating people like pieces on a chessboard. How different to King Xerxes is God? You probably heard earlier this week that there was another Category 3 hurricane set to approach New Orleans. And the government took very early action because you remember Hurricane Katrina, what it did to New Orleans, and people evacuated to safety as quickly as they could. They didn't want to be in the way this time of the destruction. That's the sort of king King Xerxes is. You don't want to get in his way. He will destroy you. He's like a hurricane. He rules as a dictator, and people run away from him. They're too scared to do anything against him. Even though he's the ruler of the largest empire in the world, he controls and manipulates and scares people in order to maintain that power. He's scared of losing it. In fact, he had a law that if you went to see King Xerxes and he didn't ask to see you, then you would be killed. So you couldn't just rock up to the king and say, "Can I see the king?" Bang, you're dead. Well, not bang, it'd be hanging usually. But that's the sort of king he was. He was a hurricane, scary, unapproachable. God is not that sort of king. God is not like a hurricane that we run away from out of fear. God is not a king that we follow because we're scared of him. God's not a king who hates us coming to see him. God is a king of love. God's a king who loves to talk to us. He's a king who actually invites us to come and talk to him. He's a king who made all things, who rules over all things, and he lays down in his word the way he wants us to live, and then he invites us to live that way. He doesn't make us live that way. He doesn't dictate how we are to live. He doesn't force us, but invites us, opens the invitation for us to follow him and live his way. And when we're disobedient to God, he's not a king who throws us away. What does God do? When we sin against him, he makes a plan to rescue us. When Queen Vashti disobeyed King Xerxes, he had her thrown out and made sure that she could never see him again. When we disobey God, God's reaction is to plan a rescue by coming into the world as our Saviour Jesus, dying on a cross, taking away our sins and rescuing us. And I believe the reason that the book of Esther holds back from mentioning God's name is to impress upon us the sort of kingship that we are under without God. Could you imagine if God, not only God's name was not mentioned, but he was not there? If God was absent, if there was no God, what kingship we would be under, the rulers that we would be subject to forever. Xerxes' kingship is about dominating. God's kingship is about sacrificing, Xerxes rules over the top of people. God comes as Jesus and serves under people in love. Authority and power. They're things that are just abused so much in our society, aren't they? Not just by kings, but by many people. You know, last year there were 60,000 confirmed cases of child abuse in Australia. Last year alone. Do you know nearly 30,000 children last year were taken out of their homes for safety? Nearly 30,000. That's over 1,000 reports. There was 250,000 reports. 60,000 were confirmed. 1,000 a week children actually abused. 1,000 a week in this country. Now Esther begins by opening up the question for us. What should authority look like? I want to suggest three big issues with King Xerxes that Esther brings up for us. And I think it's especially relevant today for those of us who are in a position of authority. And we may not be kings, but many of us are in positions of authority. Three things. Number one, authority is not about maintaining control. Humans are not given authority ever to control people. I don't know if you noticed that in the Bible. Even God doesn't control people like pieces on a chessboard. He gives them free choice. Proverbs 29:11 says about maintaining control, a wise man keeps himself under control. Proverbs 29:11. Authority is not about maintaining control. Number two, authority is not about having the final say. God is the only one with the final say. A husband who thinks he rules the house because he demands the final say on everything, I'm sure we know people like that. That sort of a person does not understand what the Bible says about the sacrificial nature of authority. Demanding the final say only makes you a dictator and often a fool. Proverbs, again, 12:15 says, a wise man listens to advice. A wise man doesn't dictate. A wise man doesn't demand the final say. A wise man listens. You're seeing these qualities of King Xerxes? Third one is this. Authority is not about people being afraid of you. I'll just change the words on that. Proverbs 9:10 says this, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I'm sure you know that verse. The word here, fear, means awe and reverence and respect for God. It's not about being afraid of God that we need to run away from him. And human authority is not about making people afraid of you. How many of you know spouses or leaders or politicians or teachers who you were afraid of? And that's how they mark their authority. Maths teachers in particular, very afraid of them. Yeah. If your children are afraid of you, if your spouse is afraid of you, if your students or your employees are afraid of you, then it's because you're exercising an authority that manipulates and scares people into obedience. And that is not a godly way to act. God's authority is such that we love to approach him. We are not scared of him. We fear him or reverence, respect. But we love to approach him. God has an authority that is a right authority. It is an authority that invites us in. Let me just say on those three points. If your spouse manipulates you, if your parents beat you, if your boss treats you like dirt, if your teachers thought you were hopeless, I imagine we've all got someone like that in our life, or have had. If you find yourself like Esther, under the authority of someone who controls and manipulates you, then the book of Esther has this to say to you. No matter what situation you are in, God will never be absent from you. No matter what situation you are in, God will never be absent. And that's what we see in Esther. God's name is never mentioned, but he is never absent. Esther also says this: while God is a loving and sacrificial king who's always there for you, he's not a Volvo. Let me explain what I mean by that. When I was growing up, when you saw a Volvo, you automatically thought of one thing, or two things actually: ugly cars and safety. Is that right? Volvos are known for their safety, right? When I was growing up, that's what they looked like. They were boxes on wheels, and they looked pretty ugly, most people thought, on average, and you had to wear a hat to drive them. But often people think God is like a Volvo. How often do you hear people say things like, well, life as a Christian may be boring, but at least it's safe. God is seen as a safe option by many people. Christianity is seen as a crutch to get you through life. God is not the safe option for people. God does not play it safe. He's always there for us. He always rescues us and guarantees heaven for those who follow him for all eternity. Guarantees that. But he does not promise us a safe life here on earth. He doesn't promise us a rich life, a prosperous life. He doesn't promise us a good job. He doesn't even promise us a family. He certainly doesn't promise us a safe life. God is not the safe option. God sent Gideon into battle with 300 soldiers against over 10,000. God leads a boy called David to fight a giant called Goliath. Jesus sat down and ate with tax collectors, had prostitutes wash his feet, and then called the leaders of the church the synagogue of Satan. Now, does that sound like a man who is living safely? God is not the safe option. If you want a safe life, don't follow God. God is the one who tells families to sell their homes and move to Kathmandu as missionaries. God's the one who raises up 60-year-olds to go to places like Jordan, places like Sudan. God is the one who calls Christians to stand up for their faith regardless of persecution, even if you see your children killed in front of you. That is not a safe God. God will not give you a safe life here on earth. He will not protect you from every bad thing that comes along. He will not stop sickness. He will not stop you losing friends. He will not stop the horrible dictators of this world on this earth. Life with God puts you at risk in this world, but guarantees you heaven. If you have to quit your job because your boss is making you do unethical things, that's going to be hard. But God will be with you and he will never leave you. If you have to separate from a violent spouse, then it will be hard, but God will not leave you. No matter how hard your life is, God will not leave you, and God will certainly not throw you aside. And God will bring justice on those who stand against you. You know, we're actually going to find that out at the end of Esther. If you've got to the end, you'll know what I'm talking about. There, God will show justice. You know, looking at this passage, I was reminded of what our former Prime Minister, Malcolm Fraser, once said. Do you know what that phrase he's best known for? Life isn't meant to be easy. I won't put that up yet. Life isn't meant to be easy. Do you know, it was actually written by George Bernard Shaw in a play called Back to Methuselah in 1921. George Bernard Shaw actually wrote it like this, a few extra words on the end. Life was not meant to be easy, my child, but take courage, it can be delightful. A little bit different to the way Fraser put it, isn't it? Life was not meant to be easy, my child, but take courage, it can be delightful. Yeah, I guess life can be delightful. And it's not easy. Let me suggest Esther just suggests something slightly different to this. I want to change one word. Life was not meant to be easy, my child, but take courage. It will be delightful. It will be delightful. The promise of heaven is the delight that we live for. There are glimpses of it here on earth. But life is not meant to be easy, especially if you follow God. take courage. It will be delightful.